Hey everyone, good morning. Thank you for being here at this morning session. My name is Michael Pena. I'm a graduate student at the University of California, Riverside. My PI is Milton McGiffin. He's an extension specialist, and our lab for the past decade or so has been really interested in biochar, which is a type of charcoal soil amendment, and most of our lab looks at its effects on water use efficiency and fertilizer use efficiency. But I was really interested in how it impacts soil microbiology, so that is the bulk of what my dissertation is on, and I'm going to share a little bit of my dissertation research with you today, which is on the effects of biochar and cover crops on a soil fertility in a organic mango orchard. So this is a little bit of background on biochar and soil biota. So biochar is, like I mentioned, it's a type of charcoal that's added to soil. It's generally made from green waste, and it is burned in the absence of oxygen. So in contrast to something like compost, it's a highly recalcitrant form of carbon, and it persists in the soil for a really long time. So in most studies, microbial biomass has been found to increase as a result of biochar additions. That was from a review article that Lehmann published in 2011. And if we look at particular types of microbes, mycorrhizal fungi are often positively affected by biochar additions as well, especially ectomycorrhizal fungi, which colonize pine trees and conifers. They can increase by as much as 157% by adding biochar in this one study in 2010. Biochar has also been shown to increase biological nitrogen fixation in common bean and other legume species as well. This is most of what my dissertation research is on, actually. But it also increases nodulation in soybeans and white clover and other legume species as well. In 2010, there was a study that showed that 20 unique isolates were found in biochar-amended soils. And of those 20, 16 of them were PGPR, or plant growth promoting rhizobacteria, or biocontrol organisms. So there are a couple of ways that biochar might be affecting the soil microbiome. One is that it positively affects root growth, so it just provides more surface area for the plants to come into contact with soil microbes. In this one study, Makoto found that root biomass increased by 47% and root tip number increased by 64%. And the nanopore structure of the biochar may provide a suitable habitat. So it could be the increase in root, or the biochar itself also provides a suitable habitat. So this is a electron micrograph image of biochar. And up at the top, the A and the B panels, those are two relatively fresh biochars. They were just added to soil. And you can see the structure of it is very highly porous, and so it can hold water and fertilizer, and also might provide a suitable habitat for microbes. So you can see a lot of the fungal hyphae there, and bacterial cells as well around the nanopores. So the two up at the top are relatively fresh biochars, and the ones down at the bottom, C and D, C is, I think, 100 years old, and D is 350 years old, charcoal-like samples that were recovered from soils. And even then, you can still see that they're quite infected with fungal hyphae and bacterial cells as well. So it's not just that biochar is providing some kind of immediate labile carbon or other type of fertilizer. And it's also persisting in the soil and having this effect on microbes as well. Okay, so now I'm getting into my project. So we were approached by a private mango orchard in California, and they're an organic orchard, and they wanted to improve their production organically. So there are limitations to growing mangoes in the desert, as you might imagine. There are extreme temperatures, so mangoes are tropical trees, so they can suffer from frost damage very easily. And it does freeze in the desert in the wintertime. It can get just under freezing, which is enough to cause irreversible frost damage in mango trees. And in the summer, it is kind of similar to here, maybe even hotter, if it's possible to imagine that. It could reach temperatures of over 120 degrees Fahrenheit. So they have to deal with excessive solar radiation. The soil is a calcareous sandy soil with a very high pH. And because it's so hot, it has a very high turnover rate of organic matter. So if you add compost, it burns off very quickly. And there's also issues with weed control and alkaline irrigation water. So we wanted to try to approach the treatment of this holistically. So we used cover crops and biochar. So this was our field experiment design. It ran from 2014 to 2016. So we installed biochar, cover crops, and sulfur burners, which acidify irrigation water, in 2014. And the cover crops were reseeded annually. And we did alfalfa with and without biochar, Sudan grass with and without biochar, and a no cover crop control also with and without biochar as well. It was a randomized block design, so one row was about 60 trees, and we used five rows or replications per treatment, so there was about 1,800 trees total in this study. And we took samples for soil nutrients, mango tree nutrients, irrigation water, fruit yield in class, tree growth, and soil DNA was collected at the conclusion of the three-year study, and this is primarily what I'm going to be talking to you today about. So this is just a picture of what the field actually looks like, the mango trees there with our cover crops installed. So on the left-hand side you see alfalfa there growing under the rows of mango trees. On the right is the control, so those are just the natural weeds that persist there. And then this is an image of Sudan grass on the left-hand side. We also tried to use cowpea as a cover crop for mangoes, but it's actually too cold in the desert when we plant these cover crops for them to actually establish, so we didn't continue with them after the first year. So we just stuck with Sudan grass and alfalfa. So like I said, at the conclusion of our three-year study, we sampled the soil for microbial DNA. So this was my analysis workflow. So soil samples were homogenized from five sump samples within each replication. And then we extracted the DNA using a soil DNA kit, which was modified for biochar amended soils. And then we chose to amplify the 16S amplicon region to identify bacterial species in archaea. And I used the 515 primer for that. And it was sequenced on an aluminum iSeq. And from that raw data, then I processed it using CHIME2, which assigns OTUs, or operational taxonomical units, to give you a pretty good idea of what the species is that the sequence corresponds to at a 97% confidence interval. And then later on, perform some downstream statistics as well. Okay, so these are some of the results. This is the taxa bar plot here. On the y-axis is the relative frequency of each, at this point, this is the phylum level. And on the x-axis, there are all the samples that we ran. And you can see here that the soils tend to be dominated by this blue color, which belongs to phylum proteobacteria, which are very common soil bacteria. And that's more or less what we would expect from these. Although the Sudan grass treatments tended to have more organisms belonging to phylum Firmicutes, and Firmicutes are organisms which form endospores that are resistant to desiccation, and many Firmicutes are either pathogenic or parasitic. So those, again, we found more of those in the Sudan grass plots. If we look at microbial families by the different treatments, you can see here on the y-axis is the number of families there, and on the x-axis is our different treatments. So on the far left, these are our two alfalfa treatments here. This is just alfalfa, and this is alfalfa with biochar. This is the just biochar. This is the control here. And then these are our two Sudan grass treatments without biochar and with biochar. So you can see pretty clearly here that our alfalfa plots had the most microbial families, while Sudan grass treatments had less than the controls. And also of note here is that our treatments with biochar, which is the far right one, the one labeled C and the one labeled AB, they had higher variability than the ones without biochar. If we look at alpha diversity is a measure of diversity within a single sample. And this is using the Shannon index, which is pretty common alfalfa diversity metric. We see again that our alfalfa treatments had the highest level of alfalfa diversity, followed by the controls with and without biochar, and then the Sudan grass treatments had the lowest levels of alfalfa diversity. If we look at beta diversity, on the left-hand side is a PCA plot, and there's not really a ton of clear defined clustering in this PCA plot, which we would expect because these soil samples are all coming from the same orchard. But there is some separation. For example, you can see here that the control in yellow tends to cluster down here at the bottom, and some of the alfalfa ones tend to cluster up here at the top, and the Sudan grass treatments are kind of all over the place. If we look at another measurement of beta diversity, this is an NMDS plot, which is a non-metric multidimensional scaling for beta diversity, and it uses rank orders rather than absolute abundances. In the middle here, in this green color, is the control. The alfalfa is the red one, and Sudan grass here is the blue one. I didn't include biochar in this. I didn't separate it by biochar because it didn't have much of an effect in this case. Again, there's not really clear clustering, but you can see that Sudan grass has kind of like the widest distribution, so we can say that it kind of it has the most beta diversity. And beta diversity is diversity between different samples, and whereas alpha diversity is within a single sample. This is an ANOVA that I ran at the phylum level to see which types of microbes are being upregulated or downregulated in these treatments. So we found a few different phylum that were significantly different than the controls. So relative to the control, we saw an increase in the actinobacteria, which are a gram-positive group of microbes that decompose organic matter. And we also saw, really interestingly, a reduction in a lot of microbes that are involved in the nitrogen cycling process. So nitrite oxidizing, ammonia oxidizing groups. So that was a really interesting result that we saw from these treatments. So we saw a reduction in these relative to control and an increase in actinobacteria. If we look at shared and unique OTUs among the different treatments, this figure is type of like a Venn diagram. So this yellow bar here represents all of the shared OTUs among our different treatments. So overall, there was 106 orders that were common among our different treatments. These here are different treatments down below, and basically where there is no bubble here, that's where that order was not found in that sample. So some of the OTUs that were not found in the controls at the order level are these here. And a lot of them, so lactobacillus is a lactic acid-forming group of organisms, and these other ones are like halophilic or thermophilic bacteria. Again, these were found in our other treatments, but not in the controls. If we look at specifically order Rhizobialis is a group of nitrogen-fixing organisms. We see this bar here is the control, and they had the lowest amount of Rhizobialis organisms, whereas our all the other treatments actually had, it seems to be an increased effect on the nitrogen-fixing bacteria, but a decrease in nitrogen-cycling bacteria. So if we look at how this impacted the mango leaf tissue, this is a leaf tissue analysis, and this was generated using a neural network. And this image is called a Kohonen map, and I'll try to briefly explain how to interpret this data. So basically the program, these are our different treatments here up at the top. This is alfalfa, Sudan grass, nothing, and then biochar. And then our different nutrient levels here down at the bottom. So where there are similarities in color patterns, you can say that there's a correlation in the data. So it's basically a way to visually inspect correlations in your data. And I've highlighted some of the things that I found were interesting. So our alfalfa plots tended to be tended to have higher nitrogen, whereas our Sudan grass treatments here tended to have higher levels of calcium, boron, and iron micronutrient levels. in the mango leaf tissue. If we look at how this translated to yield, this is yield over 3 years, and mango is an alternate bearing plant. So 2014 and 2016 were the off years, and 2015 was actually the only on year in our study. So in the on year, the blue bars are alfalfa, the red bars are the control bars, and green is Sudan grass. So the alfalfa with biochar treatment had the highest overall yield, but it was not significantly different than the control. And actually, Sudan grass tended to decrease the yield quite a bit. Up at the top is marketable yield, and down at the bottom is unmarketable yield. What's interesting is that our treatment that had no cover crop and no biochar actually had the most unmarketable yield. So it's fruit that had to be thrown away. It was not good. And all of our treatments significantly reduced unmarketable yield in this case. So some of the conclusions from this study was that alfalfa plots tended to average higher bacterial alpha diversity levels, while Sudan grass plots showed the widest distribution for beta diversity. Biochar alone did not really reveal any significant differences in microbial diversity. And our treatments tended to reduce a certain abundance of nitrogen cycling phyla, but increase the abundance of microbes in Ordo rhizobialis, which are end-fixing organisms. Alfalfa treatments increased mango leaf nitrogen, while Sudan grass treatments increased the micronutrients. All of our treatments lowered marketable fruit yield except for alfalfa and biochar. And all of our treatments, again, reduced fruit loss in the system. And with that, I'd like to thank my lab members, and my funding sources. So thank you.
One question.
Yes?
How did you apply the biochar in the field?
So we basically just put it on the side of either on the side of each row of the trees, and it was disc tilled in.
How much did you
apply? Yeah, it was about it was a fairly low amount. It was about 2 tons an acre, a little bit less than that.
Okay.